Welcome to The Daily Ben Show, offering insightful and thought-provoking news commentary and analysis from a classically liberal centrist perspective. The show is brought to you by the Institute of Race Relations. Tune in at 4:30 every Monday to Thursday for engaging discussions from our team of analysts and researchers that you won't find anywhere else.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you doing today?
Very well, Nick. How's it, man?
I'm pretty good myself, as good as one can be on a Tuesday. And Mr. John Endres. John, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Nicholas.
Right, so let's get stuck in. Our first story today is sort of a little bit of a continuation, actually, of what we said about Brackenfell yesterday, but there has been a further development which is worth mentioning. Julius Malema reportedly told supporters on Sunday, and we didn't mention this yesterday, that if the South African police want a fight, they must declare it. He said, "We will treat them the same way we treated them in the 80s. We will not only fight them at the picket lines, we will go to their homes and fight them in their own homes with their own families." In a statement, the Police and Prisons Civil Rights Union, POPCRU, which is an acronym I was not familiar with until this case, said that what Malema had said was demeaning of the role police play in public order policing while further making threats that could potentially lead to unwarranted attacks of police officers and their families within communities. This was also, his comments were also condemned by Police Minister Bheki Cele, who said, "I think the EFF leader has crossed the line. You are not going to threaten the police and think they will just fold their arms. The job of the police is clear and prescribed in the Constitution, which is to protect, prevent, combat, and investigate crime. Police are also there to uphold and enforce the law, so no one has the right to threaten police when they conduct their work." Gabriel, has Malema finally crossed the line? Do you think the ANC is going to take action against him?
I doubt it. I do think that the ANC has increasingly found itself in a position of animosity with the EFF. The EFF, of course, has long played the role of being the outsourced youth wing of the ANC. It tabled before Parliament the expropriation without compensation move to amend the Constitution, and the ANC then, after just changing one or two words, adopted that resolution, I think still remains the signature policy of the Ramaphosa administration. So in that sense, they've worked well together. Ramaphosa has made very generous comments about Malema in Parliament, has often tried to make comments sort of shielding him from attack. Most significantly, perhaps, Ramaphosa said, "We're going to take the land and return it to our people." MP Terry Lakota, the leader of COPE, then asked the president in Parliament who our people refers to, and Ramaphosa didn't answer. He allowed Malema to answer on his behalf that our people are Africans in general and blacks in particular, blacks in general and Africans in particular. That's a direct quote. So in that sense, Ramaphosa and Malema have gotten along well. The EFF and the ANC have gotten along well, but they have also, particularly in 2020, when lockdown set in, the EFF were very for the hard lockdown, the hardest lockdown possible. They saw it clearly as an opportunity to shut down economic activity.
Yeah, the so-called Skop and Donna approach to policing.
Well, yeah, they like that. And then the narrative started to change. Several well-covered deaths at the hands of the police, which on all available evidence seem outrageous. Brutal, horrendous. And of course, 50 people died at the hands of the police or in police custody in the first few weeks of lockdown. And that started to draw some attention, some critical attention. Then George Floyd died in America. Black Lives Matter got global clout. The Nelson Mandela Foundation said that this is a South African issue too, that white supremacy is responsible for the deaths of people like Collins Khoza. And there, the EFF seemed to change tack. It adopted, started adopting a sort of anti-law and order stance. As the lockdown lifted, it's been responsible for increasingly violent protests once again as that normality returns. Of course, the ANC is not in an entirely different position. For example, I just read its discussion document for the forthcoming national convention next year, Umrabulo. 200-page document. I haven't gone through all of it, but one of the things to note is that the ANC says, you know, it's very disappointing that we didn't have more Black Lives Matter protests in South Africa. Of course, the Black Lives Matter protest, Black Lives Matter means defund the police. That's according to Black Lives Matter leadership. So insofar as, you know, I think they're caught, the ANC and the EFF are both caught between being revolutionary parties who consider the government to be the enemy and consider 2020 to be just another year under the Nationalist Party apartheid regime. And this is exactly what Malema is speaking to, you know, trapping police. Anthea Jeffrey has done great work on this. 25,000 people killed in the People's War in the last years of apartheid. Often police would be called and into townships in Soweto, for example, and then on the way there, they'd be shot at and killed. So this kind of activity was part of our collective subconscious, and it's something that they want to return to. At the same time, the ANC is actually in charge of the police, and the EFF very much wants to be in charge of the police. So there's a weighty contradiction there, but that's never stopped the ANC or the EFF before. So here we sit.
So, John, what do you have to add to Gabriel's points there? And secondly, I'm really interested in what exactly Malema is trying to do here. Some people, I think it was a DAMP, pointed out that Malema himself receives VIP SAP protection. So there's not unusual for Malema, but there seems to be a wee bit of a hypocrisy involved here.
Yeah, and what I find quite noticeable is that the media reported on Minister Tlele's statement by calling it things like strongly worded and saying he was furious. But I think the opposite is actually true, that his statement was remarkably mild and really didn't go very far. So just to read one of the sections, he says, while addressing his supporters over the weekend, Malema is seen clearly encouraging direct violence against members of the SAPs and their families. Minister Tlele wants to assure South Africans that such threats will not be taken lightly. He has called on members of the police service to protect themselves. The minister is confident that if needs be, police are more than capable of defending themselves should they be under any attack. And this is, to me, an incredibly strange thing to say. So he's effectively saying, I'm going to sit back, fold my arms, and ask Malema not to do, and his supporters not to do the things that they've been encouraged to do now by their leader. And that's as far as it goes. And where, as a matter of fact, I think he should really be laying a charge against Malema, at the very least ask him to publicly retract these threats that he's made against representatives of the state. So that to me is the more surprising thing, is how mild the response has been from the police minister and also from the police union, that they haven't become more upset about this. This is a very serious threat. I think it also ties into the debate that was going on last week about whether it is justified to call the EFF a proto-fascist organization or a fascist organization. And to me, this is just one more data point that adds to the interpretation that they indeed are a proto-fascist organization. Now, they do not want to obey the state. They want to attack the state. They are willing to threaten individual employees of the state at home in order to reduce the heat that the police can put on them, as it did at Brackenfell. And I think this is the motivation of Malema. I think he wants to inspire courage in his supporters and take away any fear they might have of the police. And so he's trying to inflate their egos, make them feel strong and so on. But it is a grossly irresponsible way of doing it. And I think the police minister and also the union are not going far enough by far in their response to this.
So I think this is because that criticism that the EFF received after, as many people put it, they ran away from the police, as it was described on social media. This is Malema trying to push back against that, it seems to me. My last question, I think, to you, John, on this is, do you think, considering, you know, how the upper levels of SAPS seem to be and the minister seem to be responding to this, that there's a chance of a rift opening up between the SAPS and the government?
Well, I do think back to the Senekal court hearings when Malema was shown sitting next to Minister Tele and the two of them having a very friendly chat. So I do think that they are probably not as inimical towards one another as these latest events might lead one to believe. And I don't think there's a rift opening up between the government and the SAPs. But I think that the minister we have at the moment is quite happy to be seen as a law and order kind of guy, even though I believe he was dismissed from his previous post as National Police Commissioner because of credible accusations of corruption. So I think it's all a bit of show. That applies, I think, to much of the SAPS leadership and also to much of the ANC leadership, which is that they preach law and order, rule of law, obeying the law and fighting corruption. But in fact, they are deeply involved in corruption and in many cases in unlawful activities. I believe the deputy police commissioner has also just been fired for corruption. It doesn't seem to be a very clean organization, despite the clean members it might have. But it looks like the leadership is not very clean.
Gabriel, any final thoughts on this? And also, do you think there's any chance of a rift forming between the police and the state or the government rather?
I do think that that's unlikely as it stands. I think it's important to note how unpopular the police force in South Africa are amongst the general population. If you look at SAPS's own data, if you look at Stats SA's data, if you look at the Institute of Security Studies data, you find that huge numbers of South Africans don't trust the police to answer an emergency call in anything like a reasonable time. Huge portions of the population still find the police to be briberous. So the EFF's populist angle here is to take a huge social grievance, which is that our police force, although there are very many brave men and women who serve and protect, there are so many others that fail to do their duty. And South Africans are very upset by that. And so the EFF stands up and makes an issue about it and sort of says, well, we're going to get rid of the guys that aren't actually doing their job, in a sense. I think the EFF is hugely buoyed by, for example, the latest Ipsos polling data, which shows 5% growth in its popularity just in the last year, which shows that the largest proportion of ANC voters or ANC supporters, if they were asked to choose a second favorite party, would go for the EFF. It's only 30%, but it's larger than they say for the DA. So I think the EFF is smelling a chance here at really growing its support base. And I do think that John was right to point out that this comes straight out of the fascist playbook. It's divide and rule. It's sow chaos and reap the benefits of appeasement that come from government officials that really see this threat and think that the best way to deal with it is to cozy up to the threatener in the hopes that keeps a lid on the problem. That just accumulates power, legitimizes the grievance or the rhetoric of the EFF, and this is their bet. Their grand bet is that they're going to get ahead on the winds of chaos. So they have to sow those winds.
Very troubling indeed. Anyway, we will, of course, keep talking about this as things happen, because I'm sure the EFF will be planning another stunt soon. I think every year, basically, we have some sort of semi-manufactured racial incident during the holidays. So I'm not going to be terribly surprised if it happens again this time. John?
Just jumping in very briefly there. I was thinking this morning how remarkable it is that the EFF, that the racial incidents that the EFF has been fighting about are not very clear cut, and they have to look so hard to find something. And the fact that the cases they have been fighting about are so weak is actually testimony to the fact that there's not that much racial tension in South Africa. It has to be manufactured. It has to be sought out. It's not readily available.
Indeed. Right, let's move on to another story now. The National Minimum Wage Commission, which is responsible for determining how much the minimum wage should increase each year to keep it in up with inflation, has published its annual review of the national minimum wage and has made a proposal to equalize the wages of domestic workers and other employees. In this proposal document, which came out on Friday last week, the commission recommended that the minimum wage of domestic workers be increased to 88% of the national minimum wage in 2021, so next year, and then to be on par with the national minimum wage in 2022. They go on to say that it needs to go up to, I think, 450 Rand per month more for domestic workers. Currently, domestic workers that are employed by agencies tend to, on average, earn about 3,300 Rand per month, and non-agency employed domestic workers tend to earn around 2,800 Rand. The national minimum wage is 2,700 Rand and 740 Rand from domestic workers currently. There has been some pushback to this, of course. There are some who said that this would basically decimate the domestic workers industry and that it will lead to more job losses. John, what are we to make of this?
It's always a contentious issue to speak about because it is hard to look at where the minimum wage level is sitting at the moment. I think it's at about 15 Rand per hour, which means that a domestic
15 worker, Rand, 57 cents per hour.
Exactly. So a domestic worker working 8 hours per day earns 120 Rand, which is a pittance. And it really makes you think about whether, you know, the level of this minimum wage is so low that it has no effect, because hopefully there aren't people out there paying their domestic workers this little. But on the other hand, the thing is, of course, that labor is a product that is subject to price to supply and demand, like any other product. And if the price rises too high, or if it is forced to be too high through regulation, then demand will decline. And that means that more domestic workers won't find a job. And that is the risk here, I think. So at the moment, call it 120 Rand per day. The proposed increase is to bring it up stepwise up to about 20, 22 Rand, which would then be 160 Rand per day, which is still very little. And the point that we should keep in mind here is that the state of the economy is very weak. Many of the people who currently employ domestic workers are, I think, themselves struggling financially and might reconsider their use of domestic workers if the wage is forced to increase. Also keeping in mind that for many people, having a domestic worker is a luxury because it is work that they can do themselves. And they might decide that this is one expense they're going to cut if they need to make ends meet. So ultimately, I think it's not going to help domestic workers. It might put more people out of jobs. Possibly it will slightly increase the wages of those that do have jobs and that are being very, very poorly paid at the moment. But in South Africa, it is, I think, more important to create jobs. That's more important than anything else. And minimum wages don't help to create jobs as a rule.
Gabriel, I believe you've written about minimum wage in the past. It really looks like lockdown. I believe domestic workers are one of the hardest hit groups by the lockdown and the economic fall off since then. Are we going to see dismantling and an unwinding of this industry in South Africa? What's your view on this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think to a certain extent, some people might just decide to pay illegally low wages. If they are sitting on that margin where it makes sense for them to employ someone at 120 Rand a day, but it doesn't make sense at 160 Rand. This country's full of illegal activity or paralegal activities. The domestic workers and their employers might strike a deal. The other thing to bear in mind is that if you're employing someone 5 days a week, you might take it down to three, or if you're employing them 2 days a week, you might take it down to one or once every 2 weeks and so on. I think that it's worth bearing in mind that two reasons that the government is under the government believes that it's not going to decrease the amount of jobs. The first is that the minimum wage in domestic service was increased substantially. I think it was around 2000 and in the 2000 somewhere. And there was some worries that this was going to increase unemployment, but it didn't. In fact, it coincided with an increase in employment in domestic service. But the thing to know is that the wage level that was set by regulation at that stage was a small fraction of what it is today. So in other words, there were people who were employing staff under basically artificial market conditions that had been created by apartheid, hangover from the 80s and 90s. And when the new minimum wage was introduced and it was extremely low, that then even lower than today, much lower than today, that didn't have a huge effect on employment. It becomes very different when you're at this level. The other thing to bear in mind is the ratio between the minimum wage and the median wage. So the median wage is the sort of person in the middle of the queue. 50% of people earn less than the median wage. So if you look overall in the country, the median wage, according to Stats SA in 2017, was 3,500 rand a month. And the minimum wage council, under the advice, you know, led by Ramaphosa, then decided to implement a minimum wage of 3,500 rand a month for everything excepting domestic workers and agriculture workers, and I think one other exceptional category. So basically that rendered millions of people in the position where they are, you know, either need to get a raise or they need to lose their job or they need to continue on an illegal basis. There is just no country. I have scoured the world via the interwebs to find any other country that does have a minimum to median wage ratio of 1:1. There's nothing like it. In Russia, when they introduced their minimum wage, they set it at 1/10 of the median wage. And then they found no job losses. When the UK set their minimum wage, they put it at 30% of the median wage, which in South Africa's context would be 1,200 rand a month. There were no job losses. Setting your minimum wage at the same as the median wage has never happened. Something close happened in Brazil, where it was set at 80% of the median wage, which in South Africa's context would be something like 3,200 rand a month. And guess what happened? 80% of employees went off the grid and basically had cash relationships with their employers and just stuck below. You know, they carried on getting paid below the minimum wage. So it just increased criminality in much the same way that if you ban cigarettes during the lockdown for several months, that doesn't mean people stop smoking. It mostly just means that people smoke illegally. So I think those are two factors to bear in mind.
John?
I'd just like to mention the third category of exceptions that Gabriel alluded to just now, which is workers employed on an expanded public works program, or EPWP. And there the minimum wage is set at 11 rand 42 an hour, call it 90 rand a day, which is incredibly low, incredibly little. And I suspect that the government would use the argument that at least it gets people into work in some way. Maybe it'll gain them some skills, some networking, and maybe they'll find a way to permanent employment out of it. But that, of course, would be the same argument that should apply to private employment. So I think this minimum wage argument is a bit disingenuous on the part of government, that they're willing to pay people much, much less than what they're forcing the private sector to pay people.
Right. All right. Let us move on to our next topic for today, our last one for today. And this is something we actually talked about quite a lot, I think, at the end of last year. And it seems to have come back now. And this is violence relating to trucks, which seems to mostly be centered around KZN, mostly on the N3. The CEO of the Road Freight Association has written a letter to Cyril Ramaphosa after members of the All Truck Drivers Foundation and the National Truck Drivers Federation marched in Durban against the hiring of foreigners as truck drivers. The letter by the CEO, Gavin Kelly, said, road freight companies and truckers find themselves being attacked by forces under the pretext of foreign nationals taking jobs away from citizens. This results in damaged and totally destroyed lives. Companies, employment opportunities, economic activity, goods, vehicles, facilities, roads, and foreign investment to move goods through SA into Africa. Kelly said the lack of action from government had created the impression that it was fine with this form of protest action. He went on to say these attacks have been carried out with military precision, indicating there's a strong coordinated leadership element with some form of formal military training. We are not clear on what the objective is, but the destabilization of the country seems to be a large part of this. Gabriel, What should we take from this? I mean, what do you think we're seeing the whole story here? Is this really anti-foreigner stuff, that these targeting of trucks, these burning of trucks? I think there was one just yesterday or the day before where a truck driver was had his truck burned and then was shot and killed by these by some group. It's not entirely sure who yet. What should we make of all these truck attacks, and what should the president do to stop it?
Yeah, it is hard to know while evidence is still being gathered. Who knows if it will ever bring about a successful prosecution, who exactly is responsible. I do think that the anti-foreign element is a significant role player, both in trucking and in agriculture. There in KZN, just around Heidelberg, where 30 of these trucks have been burnt down in the last week, I've spent some time earlier 2 months ago and over the last 2 years, and you often find people hugely frustrated with Sotho's from Lesotho, but you also find that you can be a foreigner even if you're a Sotho from the Free State, or if you're a Xhosa from the Eastern Cape. In fact, most amusingly, in a sense, in such a dark story, I was in Hilton and speaking to some of its staff, many of whom were fabulous and exciting and dynamic people, but some of whom were very, very frustrated that the school was employing foreigners. And I said, like, who? And they said, like, that lady sitting over there, where's she from? Well, she's from the other side of the hill. Foreigner just meant sort of not from our clan. I think that the baseline ideology which drove the worst side of American trade unionism was often present in trade unionist syndicalist movements in Europe, is this idea that somehow we deserve whatever we demand, and the other is quite loosely redefinable. So I do think it's worth taking seriously that is a major part of the motivating force here. The other part of it is of course, that our logistics network has been badly hit by the supply chain disruptions through COVID-19, the decrease in consumer spending, the contraction of GDP. And so people are more tense. There are higher numbers of unemployed people, and idle hands make the devil's work. You know, if you're an angry young man who's unemployed, I lived in that situation for quite a while. You feel like you're not being valued by society. It's easy to find yourself falling in with a crowd who says, here's the way that we get out of it. We go and burn something down. It can be something to do, something thrilling, something to give your life a moment's meaning. And, of course, very destructive and reprehensible, and something that the president should stand against. I think that his capacity to do so is somewhat strained by the fact that he has done so very little in terms of law and order on all fronts in the last 3 years. He's got an ever-growing list of concerns. Rather than get prosecutions going before coronavirus, he waited until after, which means that they're now not only the legacy corruption cases, they're also the new coronavirus corruption cases amongst his colleagues and his fellow cadres. And yes, as unemployment goes up, as the economy shrinks, you can expect more crime, and that increases the list in terms of syndicates on that front as well. Very, very hard position for him to be in. I think he probably really does want to address this issue. I'm not really sure how he can, though, given how little good prep work he's done so far.
John?
Yeah, and following up on that, I think this is a twofold problem. The one is lack of accountability, no impunity, lack of law enforcement. And that goes all the way from the top of government all the way down. I think that's something our society has become used to now. And these truck burnings, you know, it's a criminal act. The police must prosecute the people, catch the bad guys and lock them away. Then it will stop. But the police doesn't do that. And it's the same story with the construction mafia in South Africa. And both of these things, interestingly, are being fueled by indigenization policies. You know, so we've got this, the philosophy of BE and transformation and South Africans first and our people. And all of this, I think, is feeding into the construction mafia, into the truck burnings and so on, where people feel that they have special privileges as a result of who they are in society rather than what they can contribute to society. And I think that's, you know, just a very dangerous development and very harmful for South Africa's investment prospects. With us just having had an investment conference last week, investors are going to look at trucks being burned and are going to shake their heads and probably walk away. So the government really needs to get this under control.
Definitely. Seems to be part of the sort of general sense of chaos that's kind of been creeping in now for the past, I would say, a couple of years at least, out of the areas where it used to be contained in South Africa into South Africa's healthy areas. Anyway, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Please check out thedailyfriend.co.za to find more news, analysis, and opinions. Thanks very much, everyone. We'll see you around.